up in prayer tonight. Lord Jesus, I thank you that you've already spoken today. You've already blessed us. You've already given us so much of your hand. Thank you so much that you are a loving God, a loving Father. Thank you so much for who you have revealed yourself to be. Today I pray that my heart and everyone else's will be open to your word. That we shall meet with you. And having met with you, we will not walk out these doors the same. Changes by the power of your love. Jesus. I'd like you to turn, please, to James chapter 1, verses 22 to 25. While I do that, I'll just introduce James a little bit to us today. Now, the book of James is quite an unusual one. There's a lot of theories about how it was put together. One of my favourites is that it's actually a collection of sayings from a preacher named James. James, a disciple of Jesus, no less. And as a result, whereas in, say, with Romans, you have to look at a whole chapter and place it in its context and so on, with James, you actually can much more easily look at a few verses. It gives a preacher a great deal of freedom, because they don't have to spend ages setting the scene. They can jump straight in. I recommend reading James, but I also recommend being very careful what you read, because James is practical. He isn't interested in airy-fairy theological principles. When I was a teenager and read James for the first time, I jokingly called it the Handbook of Applied Christianity. In other words, you want to know what it looks like to live as a Christian? You go to James. There isn't a single verse that isn't a challenge. There isn't a single verse that doesn't turn to you and say, how are you living? Are you living it out? It's definitely a book to read. And the great thing is it's only a short book. So as we preach on this book, I do recommend to everyone, let's make James our study in our own quiet times. Let's take the challenges to heart. Let's meet with God through the week, as well as today. With that being said, I'm going to speak on verses 22 to 25 in chapter 1. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror and, after looking at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard, but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does. How many sermons have I listened to in my life? It's a difficult question to answer, because when I was a child at the Christian Fellowship where I grew up, we did exactly what's happening there. When the speaker was preaching, the children were in the room. So for me, my childhood was not spent leaving during the sermon, but rather either sat at the back or sat at the front. And while some of the children played, I have to be honest, the seeds were sown for my character. I was sat reading the Bible in pictures, and that would be me settled for the whole service pretty much. I'd just be there, this is a good cartoon. Yes, I always did like comics too. So it was sort of the best of both worlds. Gradually, though, I started to listen to the sermon. And my pastor Chris, he was great. I thought of him like a second dad. And his wife, Kath. I've got to pin my colours to the mast. I have no issue with women preaching. because Kath was probably the best preacher I've ever heard. I asked her to preach at my own wedding, on a sermon that I remembered her preaching when I was 12, because the sermon was that unforgettable. So I've grown up in a church. I've sat through sermon after sermon after sermon. I don't even want to try and imagine how many sermons I must have listened to. How many books have I read about Christianity? Now for me, because I'm a bit of a readaholic, that's probably a slightly insane number. But all of us could probably answer a good few. How many times has God given me a prophetic word? I can remember the first time God gave me a prophecy to give for others was when I was 10. And since then, there must be hundreds of thousands of times when God's spoken to me, either directly or through someone like Amy, or someone else in this fellowship who's shared a word. How many times have I responded to a call from the front? How many times have I been reading a verse in the Bible and underlined it thinking, that's for me? With all of those times, one question comes out of this verse. What have I done about them? What did they actually mean in the long run? You know, God doesn't speak for the benefit of his health. He doesn't speak because he's getting a bit bored up in heaven, so he wants to say things just to alleviate the silence. He speaks because he thinks he's got something we need to listen to. And when he said something, he wants us, like James says here, to respond to it. Now, a real response is not coming to the front and then going away, forgetting all about it. Again, to go back to when I was a child, my mother was dealing with a number of issues and she kept going to the front for prayer. And eventually, she got a challenge from God. You do realise, for 5 months, every week, you've gone up in exactly the same place as the week before. And every week I've spoken to you. Where's the movement? What have you done about what I said? The reality is, that's not my mum's problem. That's a problem we all have. Every one of us. Let's face it, James wouldn't have written this verse if he didn't think there was a human reaction to be forgetful of what God says. Now when we think about it, it really is an absurd illustration he draws here. Who on earth goes to a mirror? You go to a mirror for a reason, looks into the mirror, and then forgets everything they've seen. A few weeks ago, I had a meeting at work. I got myself smartened up because it was quite an important meeting. I put on a tie. It was actually a tie that Sam and Sarah gave me when I started working at the bank. The next week, they were giving me that. I've still got one. And I put it on, and it matched the shirt quite nicely. And I go to the mirror, and there was a crease in the tie. What sort of idiot would I be if I just looked at that and go, great, off I go. I put on the tie, surely, because I wanted to look smart. I have to do something, either iron the tie or put on another tie. It seems common sense, doesn't it? That's the level of absurdity our forgetfulness is with what God says. He said something. It's like we've looked in the mirror and we've just gone, oh dear, I've got dirt all over my face. That's nice. That's the absurd image that James is drawing here. Here's the catch. We all do it. Every one of us. is an act of spiritual warfare. And there are actually three forces that are opposed: the world, the flesh, and the devil. What I'm going to do is quickly look at those, show how they oppose what God says, and then say, right, what are we going to do in this world? The world. We've actually already had a brilliant illustration today. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It wasn't the illustration I was going to use, but it's already been said. They were going to be thrown into a fiery furnace, but as Mike put it, they didn't see the flames, they saw him. Quite often, when we're going through life, the world is there, the situations around us, there may be flames, difficulties, problems, and we see them. We focus on them. Another illustration is in Matthew 14, where Peter is summoned by Jesus to walk across the water to him. And Peter steps out of the boat. It's one of the most tantalizing verses in the Bible. What did it feel like to walk on water? I always wonder that. And Peter takes a few faltering steps. And then the passage says, he saw the wind and he began to sink. Jesus rescued him, but he had seen the wind. Sometimes, though, it's not even the bad things that distract us. The world just has this habit, this ability to attract us, like flies to honey. Please come on. Wrong record. Let me give you an example. At 7 o'clock tonight, the BBC are going to announce who the next Doctor Who is going to be.
Don't watch it, Tom. Don't watch it.
What happens if God tries to give me a word at 5 to 7? What will my decision be? There's nothing wrong with having something I enjoy. But the question comes, where does the balance lie when God tries to speak at the worst, most inconvenient moment imaginable? Where do my priorities lie? It really is as simple as that, and we've all got our own things that we love. It might be that, I don't know, might be TV. I think that's a very common one. That little grey god in the corner that takes over our lives. It might be wanting to go on Facebook. Yeah, I'm bad at that one too. It could be any number of things. But all of these things can be a distraction at the moment when God is trying to speak. The nature of the world is to be distracting. There's also the flesh. Whether we like it or not, whether we like it or not, there is a part of our human nature that does not particularly want to listen to God. When God is putting his finger on something that is uncomfortable, we like to get a little bit defensive and change the subject. That's human nature. In Romans chapter 7, the Apostle Paul talked about similar ideas. So if it's true of him, I don't really feel much shame in admitting it's true of me. And I think it's true of every single human being on the planet. There's a little bit of us that doesn't want to listen to God. This is incidentally the reason that I've structured it the world, the flesh, the devil. Because I actually think a bit of a get-out clause sometimes is saying, oh, the devil tried to distract me. Because quite often the distraction comes from in here. It's ourselves who are doing the distracting. And we need to be a little bit more honest about it. And say, well, I wasn't really comfortable with you there, God. I think sometimes the devil is our way of avoiding responsibility for our own side of this battle. So I've done these points in a very deliberate way. We have to accept that there's a bit of us that isn't always comfortable with what God says at a given moment in time. Of course, why should we be? He's God. We're not. He chooses what to say. We have a responsibility to respond. And of course, there is the devil. He has very powerful allies in the world in the flesh. I think sometimes he can get away with being a lot less active than we make out, because he can let things, like a computer program, it does what it's supposed to do. If you've got the program running right, you don't need to intervene all the time. And the devil is like that. He's got the programs running quite nicely, thank you very much. And it's only when we actually start to respond to God that he responds a bit like, Dad's Army, when Corporal Jones would rant about the enemy. They don't like it, Uncle. The devil does not like it when we start resisting the programming, when we refuse to be distracted, when we refuse to be diverted by our own selves. That's when he opposes. So we have three powerful reasons that we don't particularly respond to God. All that brings me to a very simple question. How are we doing? Well, a mixed bag. I've got to be honest. There are sermons I've heard this year that I know I heard preached in this church 7 years ago. And while that's not necessarily a problem, because there are different people in the church, a bit of me vaguely wonders what happens to that first time you heard the sermon. How deep did it go? What sermons have even been spoken this year? What words has God said to you? How have you changed in light of those things? I have to be honest, I think mixed bag. I think there's some brilliant, beautiful growth. Aidy today shared. I've got to be honest, Aidy, to me it was one of the most beautiful testimonies that you've ever shared in this church. And yet at the same time, I'm pretty sure there are places where people haven't moved on. And those have been places where God is actually speaking as well. How are we doing? What are we going to do to change this? How do we fight this battle a bit better? How do we stop being just oppressed by the world, the flesh, and the devil, and actually move on with God? I've got a few suggestions. First of all, focus. In Psalm 77, the psalmist is at a place where God seems a bit distant. And in verses 11 to 12, he writes, "I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles of long ago. I will meditate on all your ways and consider all your mighty deeds." Notice the verbs there. Remember, meditate, consider. Active, decide, do it. In other words, he will not allow his focus to shift. He will actively concentrate his mind on who God is and what God has done. He will not allow his own flesh, his own sinful nature, to divert him. He will not allow the world and its pleasures or pains to distract him. He will not allow the devil to oppress him. He has made a conscious choice. that take time. So wrapped up in this is a concept that he is not happy with forgetting God. He is going to commit time and effort to actively focusing on him. When God has said something, he is going to meditate on that, to dedicate time to it. That's the first tip I have in this battle. Focus. Second, act. In Joshua chapter 4, the Israelites are marching towards the promised land and they come to the river. And they're going to cross over the river. God is going to part the waters, guide them across. But there is something that God calls them to do. He says to Joshua, choose one man from each of the tribes. Let them carry a stone. And when they get to the middle of the river, pile the stones up. One for each tribe. Then cross over. Why? Because in verse 7, these stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. You have done something. You have left a concrete physical marker of what God did to remind you, so that whenever, in generations to come, you go to the river and you see a stone peeking up above the waters, you remember what God did. It's why we break bread and take communion. Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me. It's why Matt, for example, a few sermons ago, gave us all a little pebble. Curious question. What have you done with the pebble? Where is it? What's the point of a memorial that you don't see and don't remember? It's a tricky question, these, isn't it? Oh, these, they're nasty questions, because they make us wonder, what have we done about what God said? As Amy put it, God wants you to move on. He doesn't speak for the benefit of his health. He speaks because he wants you to move on. He is a loving father, and he knows what we need to hear. Sometimes that is, quite simply, I love you. I am your Abba. I am your Daddy. Come to me. Sometimes it's a lot more challenging. What you're doing there is wrong. Change. Whatever it is he's saying, he does it because we need to move on. You know, I think the saddest thing in the world is looking at a believer, looking at myself, let's be honest, spotting something that God has said 10 years ago and knowing I haven't moved. I think that's so sad. I really do. God speaks. He's spoken today so powerfully, so beautifully. But the real question is, what are we going to do after this? Is this Sunday just going to be forgotten? Or are we going to move on? Are we going to do something about it? Are we going to look in the mirror and change our tie? Are we going to carry on with creasing it? The choice really is as simple as that. You can see why I say James is challenging. He doesn't leave you alone. This isn't the kind of book that you can read and then go about your life the same. Or at the very least, it's not the kind of book you can read well. If you just don't, yeah, then you can do it. And everything that God wants to say. Let's not just be hearers of the word, guys. Let me not just be a speaker of the word. Let's be doers of it. When God speaks, let's listen. And let's put his word into practice. Let's meditate on his word. Let's find ways of concreting what God has done. That was one of the things that really struck me about David's testimony. The writing of the letter. The physical act. I don't know what your act will be. It might be that there are words God says that you need to simply write them down. It might be they require you to do something a bit more active. Maybe you need to choose a memento, a memorial of what God said, like the pebble, like the stones in the river. Maybe you need to tell someone else. Maybe when God's spoken to you on a Sunday, you need to ask Ruth if she can get you a copy of the prophecies and the little words that were given. Because those are, we're trying to record those as well. So why not get a copy so you keep it when God's spoken to you through it? When it's a sermon, why not listen to the podcast? Save it on your iPod or on a CD. So that you've got it to hand. So that it doesn't get forgotten. What was the sermon that was preached 8 months ago to the day? I bet nobody can remember. What did God say on that day? In 8 months' time, I wonder, will we also be thinking, what did God say today? Let's apply these things. Let's live them. Let's fall in love with our God more and more. Let's recognise that what he says is of infinite value. Much more value than who the next doctor is. Much more value than Coronation Street. Much more value than Facebook. Infinite value. Even more value than work. Let's meet with it. And let's be changed by it. May God bless this word to our hearts. Thank you.